Hey, everybody. So before we get into today's episode, we start off by commenting on the absence of NFL news. There's a lot of talk about Miles Jack's candle-making side business. But of course, as soon as we finish recording, there is some NFL news, and it's actually pertinent to a discussion we had on the show. So Gerald McCoy, the defensive tackle, signed a one-year deal. It's worth about $8 million, chance to make up to $10 million or so based on incentives, playing time, that kind of thing. The discussion we have on the show is about the Panthers transitioning to a 3-4 scheme. Obviously, when we had it, we didn't know McCoy was joining. This adds an interesting wrinkle because now you've got Dottari Poe at nose, Kaywon Short and McCoy on either side of him, which is a pretty freaking fearsome defensive line. Now, the Bucs, it's funny, are also transitioning to a 3-4. And before they parted ways with McCoy, Bruce Arians came out and said he thought that Gerald could play in a 3-4 at defensive end. But really, he's so multiple. He could play across the line. It's the kind of thing where I think it doesn't really matter what their scheme is and how often they use him or how they use him. It's Gerald McCoy. That Panthers front seven is pretty freaking crazy now. So anyways, it looks like a great deal for them. Also, I think a great price. And I guess apparently we're hearing he wants to get revenge on the Bucks. Never a thing you want to hear. All right, so here's the show. Welcome to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts hears the words out route and thinks it's time to pee. I am taping this from beautiful Bristol, Connecticut. It actually is. I usually say that with like a little bit of sarcasm. Not that Bristol's not beautiful, but usually when I come here, it's gray and cold. And
Bristol's not beautiful. I can say that definitively. But it is. You picked the perfect time of year to be here.
The most glorious time to be in Bristol. And I'm here for NFL meetings for a few days. And if you couldn't tell from his interjection, I am joined now by unequivocally the most frequent guest on this podcast at this point. You have surpassed Dominique.
Yes.
It was like 3 or 4 weeks ago last time. So the frequency is upping.
Yeah, we've really picked that one up. And so I needed that to jump over Dominique because he was the first guest on the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was a big point of contention for a while. But
how many times have you been keeping track?
I think this is the 5 spot right now.
Really?
I think we've hit 5 times at this point, which feels pretty big. So pretty proud. It's like the 7 club for SNL hosts, how they did a big bit about that. I feel like the fivers for the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny are their own unique club.
Yeah, you're like Brady because being on my show is the Super Bowl.
More or less,
put a ring on each finger at this point. The biggest piece of NFL news this week for me was the revelation that Miles Jack, Jaguars linebacker, makes and sells candles.
Yeah, so this came out because Jalen Ramsey and somebody else Leonard Fournette were doing like one of those Instagram live things, and they started ripping Miles candles.
So they were saying he should spend less time making candles and more time studying the playbook. I either thought making candles was a euphemism for something because there's so many things I don't know as listeners to this podcast know, and I'm often upset to learn what it means later, but no. They literally meant he was making candles. I tweeted at him, so he has a website, like candles made by Miles or something. And I tweeted at him some suggestions for taglines and name. First of all, Miles Wax Candles is right there. Miles Jack Jump Over the Candlestick, I thought. I haven't heard back yet, but Miles, if you're listening, we approove here at Mina Kimes Show.
Oh, 100%. Like, I didn't know there was a site I could get them, and now I want to buy Miles Jack Candles. This is sort of like when we found out that Chris Long had the candle shrine in his locker room to Nick Foles. Now I feel like the Mina Kimes Show needs a candle shrine to Miles Jack, lit by Miles candles.
By his own candles. Yeah. Oh, that's an interesting idea.
Also, I do like the idea that making candles has an Urban Dictionary entry that means something like really like messed up.
It's upsetting. It's an upsetting thought. Wick, you know, Wick picks. It feels like there's some potential there. Tagline also, I just thought of this one. Much like Miles, the flame doesn't go down. Remember Miles Jack wasn't down? Like a meme.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Deep cut NFL references. This is truly the like inner crust of NFL podcasts.
So all of that candle talk was basically to drive home the idea that there's not a lot of NFL news this week. So I thought it would be a good time to take some questions from listeners. I've been promising, threatening really, to do a mega mailbag for a while, and just to kind of talk through some of the stuff that's in your guys' mind with regards to teams, off seasons, who's up, who's down. Put out a request, got a lot of great questions. Usually I get them in the iTunes reviews. I only take the positive ones. But this time, just for 1 week only, took them on Twitter because I was going for volume. After this week, just a little housekeeping, we're going to start, we're going to do a few things.
Ooh.
We're going to start going through the divisions.
Doing, yes.
Division preview. Just love division previews.
Hook it to my veins.
Just, that's, I love it so much. I get so amped. But one of those previews, I hinted at last week, I was going to, their Mina Kimes show is going to be going on the road. There's going to be an event in a major American city in July. Not, the date's not out yet.
Ooh.
And you're going to be shocked by the city.
I have a feeling that this one is really going to catch some people off guard.
It's Seattle, folks. The Mina Kimes show is coming to Seattle. So more information on that soon.
This is going to be Seahawks Twitter in real life, isn't it?
Oh my gosh, do you think Cable Thanos will come?
Oh my god, the god himself, fresh off another video game sesh with Russell Wilson.
So Cable Thanos, if you're listening, you're invited. But before we get to the previews, and like I said, more information about that very, very, very soon. We're also going to do Dinks and Dunks, and a very special Dinks and Dunks. Before we get to that, oh, and also, I keep thinking of things I want to do. Aside from the mega mailbag, I also wanted to talk to you about Body Blows / Establish the Run Part 3. It is like John Wick 3 in that it's getting a little repetitive at this point. This debate comes up every now and then and the usual suspects come out wielding, you know, their sabers and guns. I don't know who John Wick is in this scenario.
Yeah, I haven't figured that out either, but I know that much like every John Wick movie, when we finish, I already know there's going to be another iteration of this and we're going
it's
to get
never
another
ending.
One.
So I want to talk about that. Then I want to talk about the mailbag. Then I want to do Dinks and Dunks. But before we talk about Body Blows, wow, that was not the voice I intended.
Yeah, what was that voice supposed to
be? I wanted to do like a deep, like, Body Blows. Like a John Wick 3 voice, but instead it was a creepy, like, Body Blows voice. Before we talk about any of that, I want to tell you guys about ZipRecruiter. Finding a new job is a lot of work. What if you had your own personal recruiter to help you find a better job? So this is different now. This is like a new, new concept. So ZipRecruiter's technology can do that for you. I just recently learned. You have to just download the ZipRecruiter job search app, let it know what kind of jobs you're interested in, and its technology starts doing the work. The ZipRecruiter app finds jobs you like and puts your profile in front of employers, because previously we had heard all about employers looking to hire people.
Oh, yeah.
Naturally, now there's the flip side of it. You know, employers would be looking for someone like you. Not you, Michael Jr.
Yeah, no, they don't want me.
If an employer likes your profile, ZipRecruiter lets you know. So, and it's not like Tinder. You will get...
Yeah, you're not going to just be swiping aimlessly and no one swipe you back.
No promises, but I'm guessing the it's a better return for dudes. If you're interested in the job, you can apply. No wonder ZipRecruiter is the number one rated job search app. And based on a third-party survey, 7 out of 10 people who found a new job in ZipRecruiter increased their salaries. That's awesome. Those are the results. Survey, by the way, it was a 2017 U.S. survey of over 500 ZipRecruiter users who got hired for a job they found on ZipRecruiter. My listeners should download the free ZipRecruiter job search app today and let the power of technology work for you. Do not wait. The sooner you download the free ZipRecruiter job search app, the sooner it can help you find a better job.
Let's get this bread.
You like my? We're doing this in person. So Mike's seeing what normally people don't see is when I read an ad, I use my hands.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're really selling it, though. Like, I'm sitting here like, do I need to start looking for a different job? Also, did someone you met with tell me I need to start looking for a different job? Is this the way, as a friend, you let me know?
Speaking of hands, speaking of catching these hands, let's talk Body Blows. So,
yeah.
Okay, so I tried to figure out how this all got. It's one of those things where you spend one day off of Twitter and then everyone's angry at each other, which is every day on Twitter. But you have to kind of follow some threads back to figure out how it gets started. I believe it started, friend of the show, Shail Kapadia, awesome writer at The Athletic, interviewed Jeffrey Lurie, who's the Eagles owner, and is, by all accounts, a very progressive mind when it comes to football, pretty analytically inclined guy. And the subject of establishing the run came up, ETR. And when I say establishing the run, it's this idea that establishing the run, meaning running successfully, helps you later in the game. It's a thing that you need to do as an offense. And Lurie, like many analytically inclined folks, kind of scoffed at it. So then we've got, I believe is where it started. Jeff Schwartz.
Yes.
Also a friend of the pod. Yeah, Shields come on. Jeff hasn't come on, but he is a friend. Tweeted lots of chatter about establishing the run and how data shows that's an outdated way to think on offense. I agree. Important point. Jeff agrees. However, I've always thought as a player that, quote, ETR was about asserting physical dominance over the opponent. Bleep those. I'm going to say it that way every time. Over a game. Okay. Lot to unpack here. Okay. And then this kicked off a lot of, you know, people sniping at each other and getting areas they all want to do.
Yes, classic Twitter where a very measured take where one side agrees with the other before making their own point turns into people just full-on knife-fighting John Wick each other.
Okay, so before we get to whether body blows are real... I already messed up. Before we get to whether body blows are real, let's talk about kind of the run and where we are in 2019 in football. Look, passing is up by just about every measure, and not only has the volume of passing increased, the efficiency of it. So it's up because it's working. Okay, that is where offenses are.
Yes.
Unless you're Brian Schottenheimer. But I think that's the consensus now. Passing is good. Passing off, you look at the offenses that are, although we can talk, I want to talk about the Patriots a little bit later and what they did in the playoffs because that comes up sometimes as a counterexample. And I don't think that's quite fair for reasons I'll get into. But by and large, successful offenses in the NFL are passing. They are passing early. They are using play action. If you look across the league, but on average, rushing is down. So that's where we are. This concept of body blows suggests that, hey, maybe it's easier to pass later if defenses are tired from running the ball. Now, statistically, we have seen, running the ball early does not lead to more passing success later. If anything, I think actually rushing the passer can be quite tiring.
And it's also the antiquated notion that running the ball early and wearing defenses out gives you the ability to then grind people out in the run late in the games when you're trying to close, which is, as we talked about, a misnomer because if you're running late, this idea of hitting rushing totals or an arbitrary number of rushes in a game in order to have winning success, that all goes out the window because if you're running late, that means you are winning. Most teams are running at the end to run out clock because they have won. And as you pointed out, most of that winning is done via pass now.
Yes. I think actually kind of lay out some of the things that we've learned over the last couple of years. You know, I mentioned passing works, passing's effective, often pass early. That's one thing. Establishing the run, like running early doesn't help passing late. Also, running early in a series is a bad approach. There's been 538 had a great piece about that last season. As you mentioned, running late in games, you're ahead usually. So that's, I think, I actually made the mistake on this podcast. I was kind of looking at rushing attempts and I was like, wow, look at the Rams. Like, and I boneheadedly had forgotten that they were just ahead a lot early in games. So you have to consider game situation and that kind of thing. Running the ball also, by the way, this is something you'll hear. Well, it's time of possession. Actually, no, getting first downs keeps your offense on the field. And if running is less effective at getting first downs, that's not really the case. Now, it maybe helps you avoid turnovers, which is very different from time of possession. And then finally, this is another thing that I think people are starting to coalesce around. Ben Baldwin, also a friend of the podcast, writes for The Athletic, did a piece for Football Outsiders last year showing how running either frequently or well does not help play action. That one, divisive.
Very, very divisive.
I have never met a player who's down with that. I'm just going to throw that out there.
No, well, and it's this whole idea, and all of this is centered around results versus, it's the end result versus how you get there type of deal, and we have all this data that shows, all right, the end results and how we thought we got there is kind of been jumbled up at this point. But with that one, they've always been seen as complementary. Like when you start, when you start football every year and you start installing plays, there's always a method to the way that they're installed. The way you install certain runs, the way you install plays on first down or third down, they're all designed. So as you're learning them in the order that kind of makes sense. You're learning the plays that go together. All right, we've got a bunch of lead plays. We've also got a lead draw play off that. We've also got a play action pass that uses that same blocking scheme, that same sort of assignment situation that we're using in that run based off of that, because the idea is we're showing the defense something. And quite simply, as a former offensive lineman, we're using that run early on. So the minute I'm teeing off on that run and the minute I'm taking that same step as a player on a play action pass, I'm in theory now confusing the D lineman based off that when all the data is saying, no, your same technique on that play action pass sans that run is still going to net you the same result.
Well, let me ask you about that because Yes, you just explained why I think conceptually we've always believed it's necessary to establish play action. If you look at these numbers and you see, okay, actually, no, you don't have to run the ball well. You don't have to run it to succeed in play action. What you do have to do is confuse defenses. You have to sell your run keys, right, as offensive linemen.
Yes.
Now, I want to ask you, as an offensive lineman, is your ability to sell that at all impacted by the run game?
It's not affected by that. And I've thought a lot about how I wanted to phrase this going into today, because I'm a person that I think arrogance is earned, and I don't have the arrogance as a player to say that the way that I thought about things necessarily got an outcome that allows me to be arrogant about, no, this is absolutely the way you have to do things. So when I look at it, I say, all right, what could be true about this idea that you don't need to establish the run, and what can be true of the opposite? And the thing I kept coming back to was, early in a game for me, just anecdotally, I always remember the first couple of drives are kind of a crapshoot because you're trying to negotiate for yourself. All right, what did we go over in the game plan? What did I see on tape? And how is that marrying up with what I'm seeing in real time on the field now? Because you're never getting the exact thing that a team showed you. There's tendencies that go, but game plans are specific week to week. These are, you know, multi-million dollar paid coordinators on both sides of the ball. And so I would always rather see early the things we're going to go back to late, and that where it comes to the antiquated idea of run early to run late, well, no, we figured out that that's not a real correlation. So I would rather do early the things I'm going to need to do later. And if I'm trying to excuse at all this idea that players still have that, yeah, you need to run the ball so I can get to play action, is I want to do the same things technically without having that stake. There's just a difference in confidence that came with running the ball for a long time, because I think that's what you practice more. And that's really what's at the heart of this, is you are what you do repeatedly. And so I want to go out there and do the thing as an offensive lineman that's going to make me confident in everything I do from there on out. And before, run blocking was way easier. It was, you know, you didn't have the pressure of trying to hold up in traditional passing plays, a lot of which took longer time to develop. You're going forward. You get to apply pressure instead of absorbing it. All these different things. We're at a day and age now in the passing game where, because passes are so quick and because so many of them come off runs, I think you've got opportunities in that are mixed in, that if you coached it enough and you drill it enough and you do it early, you can garner that same confidence from doing the thing you've done repeatedly, even if that's now not the run. It's just that for so long was our comfort zone. It's like, all right, run block. I got a chance to tee off on somebody. I got a chance to go and do that and know that's going to affect him later on and give me that confidence psychologically.
I think it's very interesting. When you look at the teams that were really good at play action, it's New England, Los Angeles, Kansas City. Teams with good offenses.
Yes.
There are also teams with very good offensive lines.
Yes.
Those three teams. And I wonder, and by the way, they are teams that had good running games too.
Yes.
But again, we've established that statistically that perhaps. But I do wonder, like, maybe we've been too worried about the run game and should have been worried more about in terms of selling play action and the efficacy of it. Obviously, the quarterback is still a little important part of that. But maybe we should have been focusing more on, I guess, I don't know if you can explain to me, it's the skill level of the line, the coordination.
And I think it's what you coach and how, right? Like, that's the other part of this is, we assume rational players in all this, but this isn't chess. This is a game played by human beings. And so those kind of things matter in all this. Like, you can't assume that every time they're going to do the right thing, or everyone's coached the same or equally or on the right things. So if you've got coaches like the Dante Scarneckias of the world in New England that are doing well with that, if you've got coaches like Mike Munchak, who's out in Denver now, like Harry Hiestand in Chicago, who you know are coaching things a certain way, that's going to translate regardless of run or pass, because so many of those things are consistent, and probably because they've worked it. Like, all of this requires synergy. Like you mentioned, the Eagles have synergy from top to bottom on their approach. And so everyone buys in, from player acquisition to drafting to the way that people are coached and what they're coached on. And so if I'm coached on something more, if I'm coached up on play action more, if I'm coached up on the techniques that we're going to use more often, I'm going to have more confidence going into those situations when we run those plays.
Regardless of whether we've run the ball X amount of times, or whether our running back is Todd Gurley or some no-name guy, it's much more about technique and repetition and coaching and precision is kind of what you're saying.
Exactly. Now, there also is the old thing of, like, you also like going out there and being the aggressor. Like, that's the other part. We're not chess pieces. You're guys. It's a lot easier to get a group that's rolling and confident and 10 foot tall and bulletproof when you've been going out there and rolling a guy back off the ball and asserting dominance. That's the other misnomer, though, is that you can't do that in pass pro. Like, you hear all the time, pass pro doesn't have to be passive. Like, you look, the best offensive linemen are looking for body blows in the pass game.
Well, that's interesting.
You're looking for where you can help out in that. Offensive line's the art of where to give and receive help.
Yeah.
And so I know, all right, if we're sliding one way and that DN goes inside, I got a chance to make him regret doing that every time. Those are body blows.
Well, to sort of bring this, I guess, full circle, in the beginning I said I was going to talk about the Patriots being sort of the counterexample because everybody's pointed to how much they ran, not just in the Super Bowl, by the way, in the entire postseason. And look, obviously, you run the football. Like, you're not going to pass 100% of the time. First of all, play action, like, yes. Actually, 538 did another interesting piece on this where they showed the number of times you ran it didn't decrease the efficacy, but they only got to, like, 12. And at that point, you have very few teams that are running it more than that many times a game. But still, you know, there wasn't. However, you can't just, there's a reason why you can't run play action every single play in a football game. There's a reason why you can't. You have to run sometimes. And I think the reasons, there are many reasons why you still run the ball. A lot of it depends on what the defense is giving you. The skills of that defense, the skills of your offense, the skills of your quarterback, right? Because, yes, passing is more effective when you have a guy who can pass the football. There are a lot of teams where you got to run more because your guy can't pass it, you know? And that's, you'll run it a little bit more. Or you've got a quarterback like Lamar Jackson, we'll talk about later, where that's actually a pretty significant part of his skill set. So it's team to team. And I think with the Patriots, obviously Tom Brady is a guy who could pass the football, but a lot of it had to do with what defenses were giving them in this particular postseason and them being so adaptable game to game.
There's a couple really good points in that. One, it is. It's asset allocation. Like, yeah, passing is great, but there's a finite amount of resources at all these spots. Like, everyone doesn't have access to great wide receivers who are a perfect fit for their scheme, top quality quarterback play, all these things on and on down the list. And so it's an adjustment of what's available to you in the market, what's available to you in the draft, all these different things. But as far as taking what you can give you, that's the interesting part, because we kind of joked around the draft that Dave Gettleman was sitting in a dark room watching that Patriots Super Bowl run. Like, yes, establishing the run is back. All my decisions, all my decisions are justified for these hog mollies in my pursuit of them.
Sorry.
It's never not going to be funny to me at this point. Body blows. But it's that idea of taking what the defense gives you. And what I kind of look and continue to wonder is, it's also, all of this has been incentivized by the league, like incentivized by rules, incentivized by what defenders, especially on the back end, are allowed to do. And we've had such a shift. We've talked about the prevalence of nickel personnel, you know, putting an extra defensive back on the field, going to smaller bodies up front. At what point is there a market correction? Because the ability to take what defenses give you, quite frankly, you see it in the NBA finals right now, where if someone's so obsessed with taking away the 3-point line, eventually you've got to go inside just to get back to your strength and the thing that you want. And so New England sees, all right, you're going to keep trotting out nickel like that. We've got, and this is the luxury of resources, we've got flexible enough personnel to say, no, we can go out there and now exploit your weakness. Okay. If you're going to give us that glaring a weakness, we're going to take it.
The Chargers, you literally are out of linebackers? Okay. Actually, a lot of the questions do kind of address the run game and teams and teams that may or may not be addressing the run game. So let's get to the mega mailbag, Mike Ryan.
Question. Question. Lenny. For your thoughts.
All right, now it's time for the mailbag, which is brought to you by Tissot. Tissot, the official watch of the NBA. Shop at us.tissotshop.com. Well, actually, it's a mega mailbag because I took a lot. Usually I just take 5.
Swole mailbag.
We're going to take a lot more than that. This is the Establish the Run of mailbags. body post. Okay, so the first one is not about establishing the run, but it is about the Patriots in a sort of roundabout way. And I think it's a really good question because I've actually had this discussion with a lot of people and everyone has different answers. So I'm curious to see what you have to say. CK Spoth asked, out of the Jets, Bills, and Dolphins, which team do you see having the best chance at finishing second in the AFC East? This is a fun one.
This is a fun one.
So really quick, I pulled up, I was just curious, the Pythagorean wins for those three teams last year because I wanted to see, you know, which is how many games they should have won, right, based on the underlying numbers. And it's really similar, which is why this is a fun question. The Jets, 5.3. The Bills, 5. The Dolphins, 5.1. So we are in a very narrow grouping here. Now, these teams have all taken very different approaches to the offseason. If you had asked me this question 3 weeks ago, before a certain football team in New York exploded, I actually think it would have been a little bit easier, which is to say I would have gone with the Jets. And I think I'm still leaning Jets, but I want, what about you before I get into my explanation?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think it's the Jets. And honestly, that explosion, while it's been interesting and fun to watch from the outside, to me, doesn't really net you much negative on the football side because we're past the point where any of that stuff really factors in.
Yeah, I actually think it's going to make Le'Veon Bell like chippier and play. I mean, whatever, that's stupid. But
no, but for a guy that's taken a year off, like you can't discount that. Like he does have something to prove to a bunch of people that thought he made a mistake.
Well, okay, so do you agree it's between the Jets and the Bills?
Yes, I think. Well, I mean, you know, I mean, you're the president of the fish, you know, the fish tank in here.
We have a fish tank question later about Josh Rosen, so we'll get to that.
Perfect.
But I think the Dolphins they just have too many holes in that roster deliberately.
And
so yeah, it's, you know, it's not the Jets and the Bills are both teams that made, I think, a pretty concerted effort to get better this offseason, and I'll kind of recap that now. So the Bills really bolstered their offensive line, which was a huge issue with Allen, right? They added Mitch Morse, Ty and Sekwe, swing tackle. And then they got some weapons for Allen. John Brown, right? Yeah. Cole Beasley,
yep.
Tyler Kraft. And then they also drafted Cody Ford,
yes.
Offensive line. And then added Ed Oliver. So getting better in the trenches. I still think it's going to be a really good defense. But, you know, a lot of their ability to, I guess, progress beyond those five wins is contingent on what we see from Josh Allen, right?
Yes, and I think that's the biggest difference, right? As you look at both of these teams, I thought added a fair amount. Obviously, you mentioned the big name in New York, especially offensively. What Le'Veon Bell nets you as a team with a young quarterback, I don't think can be overstated. Like, it's a guy who we had this whole issue with because he is a legitimate number two wide receiver, mm-hmm. and he is someone that's performed that way. And defensively, they've got a pick on their side that certainly figures to factor in pretty strongly as that as well. At every level, they seem to have someone. You add C.J. Mosley in the middle there. You've already had Jamal Adams at safety. So
you're, it's a great front seven.
You're pretty stacked in that regard. And so all things being even, I think Sam Darnold is a better quarterback now and in position to develop
better.
You
think so?
Yes.
Interesting. Yeah, I think so. Right, Bell, Crowder, on offense, right? And then obviously, just Crowder, I think. Robbie Anderson is probably the number one still. They bolstered the offensive line a little, too. They added Assemble.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's going to be the key. Defense, I think that they have a really, really sneaky good front seven. A little bit worried about the secondary outside of Jamal Adams, right? Opposite Tremaine Johnson,
yes.
who was a bit of a bust. It's like, I think Brian Poole, off the top of my head, is the other cornerback, so that could be an issue. But just from a pure talent perspective, I do think, given the fact that I'm pretty significantly higher on Darnold than Allen at this point in my career, I would probably lean Jets. And I agree with you that the turmoil in the front office is probably the effect that'll have on the game this season is probably overstated.
Yeah, decisions have already been made at this point. The football related decisions, you'll have a few things tinkered here and there. And, you know, I just think that's ultimately the thing. Like, for better or for worse, we know you kept Mike Maccagnan on throughout that entire process in order to make all those decisions, but they're done now. There's really very little else for a GM to do during this time of year. So
I did a whole interview about the Jets and Mike Maccagnan, and I said Mike McCannion the whole time. And it's the opposite problem where I can't say French words. I'm so paranoid about getting French words wrong, which I've revealed on this podcast. It's not a secret, that I think I'm over-Frenchifying things now.
Ooh.
I was like, Mike McCannion.
McCannion.
Sounds like the fourth musketeer. Lebetard Reddit. Oh, he's a
shouts.
Shouts. Like that guy. Asks Lenny. Oh, it's a question for Lenny. What is your favorite movie or TV dog?
Ooh.
I'm going to go with Wishbone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Very
Wishbone,
nice.
Like cultured.
Yeah.
Lenny, one of the genetic tests he's done too, said that he was part Jack. So there was a brief moment when Jacks were like everywhere on TV.
Very hot in the street right now. They've since been overtaken by pugs and French bulldogs.
Yeah.
I feel like the squishy faces are very, the squishy rounder faces are very in.
Like Eddie from Frasier.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Now it's right. You're right. Yeah. Well, I liked Wishbone, so I'm going to go with Wishbone there. At Hot Boy Soup. Okay, so this is the question I alluded to that actually I'm a little bit torn on. He asks, what does Josh Rosen need to do next season to solidify his status as the Dolphins franchise QB? Feels like he'll have to play at a huge level for the Dolphins to not go after Tua from Herbert in 2020. Shout out, Lenny. So I was really excited when the Dolphins got Josh Rosen. I viewed it as a low risk, high upside signing, and I still think that's true. However, I laid out the dangerous scenario dangerous might be a little bit dramatic, but so there's three possible ways this could go. Rosen's terrible, clearly bad. Okay, we're good. We didn't spend a lot of money. He's done. Rosen's great. Oh, awesome. We got this killer quarterback or whatever. Probably the most likely scenario is that much like Arizona, the team's so bad, you can't really tell. Yeah. And that's concerning, Mike.
Yeah, that's the worrisome part in there. And then I'm sure for the team, the worrisome part would be, all right, you do that, and maybe the other two teams that we discussed in the Bills and Jets don't progress as much and don't have that clear delineation. Like, yeah, you just said, you know, when you go those win totals, everyone was so closely lumped together that what if you get all that and you finish a little better than expected, and now you're so far out of draft range for the three guys, yep, that we just mentioned, those quarterbacks, that while you have been designing your offseason to have capital to go after that, you would like to not have to mortgage as much to get in range, right, for one of those guys.
Like, do you stay on the treadmill of mediocrity instead of committing to the fish tank?
Yep.
I think that's why they're going to have to be very intelligent. Like, it's hard to evaluate a quarterback in a bad situation. It's not easy. I actually think his situation in Miami this year is better than what he's coming from in Arizona. And yes, I'm not sure a lot of people would agree with that. But, you know, I was just pulling up their depth chart. You got Devontae Parker, Kenny Stills, Albert Wilson. Not bad.
No.
Mike Gesicki and Dwayne Allen at tight end. Kenyon Drake and Kalen Ballage.
God, when you lay it out like that, like,
not
Kenyon, Kenyon Drake, Gesicki, like, those were guys that showed flashes. Yeah. Albert Wilson, obviously.
Albert Wilson's amazing. Yeah. And then Chad O'Shea from the Patriots is now the offensive coordinator. Yep. That's exciting, too. Really, the biggest problem is offensive line, right? Because, you know, Juwan James walked and got paid a ton of money. But when you look at that line outside of Tunsil, it's...
Yeah, troubling. I think they drafted Michael Dieter, who will be a good guy. That guy will be an instant starter for them, third rounder from Wisconsin. But you're right. Other than that, it's going to be tough. I'm not going to lie, for Josh, I look at this in the more and more, because as we just laid it out there, with the way it looks and with the way this is really laid out for Brian Flores, too, as a coach, where we felt like this first year was going to be a wash. Like, before this was in the plans, we kind of saw the offseason model, said, all right, they're going to give him a year knowing full well they've got a lot to retool and they're going to really start that building process next year. I feel like it benefits him to start fresh with a new quarterback in that spot. Let's put it this way. To answer the original question, Josh Rosen would have to play lights out. He would have to make it painfully obvious, like you said, or else this is an audition for other teams. Do well enough to turn him into an asset that you can flip in that.
What if it's like a Sam Darnold year out of him, where, like, he's up and down, good at the end, flashes, team's obviously not good?
If it's a Sam Darnold, if it's like that, I'm going with one of the young guys in the draft.
Really?
If I'm in range for Tua or Herbert, I'm doing that, and I'm giving my head coach a chance to start with the quarterback and build this all the right way.
And by the way, if he plays that well, you should be able to flip him. Like, poor Josh Rosen, by the way, but
I'm sure that's the way he looks at it, is most guys outside of the first rounders, you go into every year saying, I'm auditioning for all 32 teams, especially going through the preseason and through this process. And I think that's going to have to be his mentality, unfortunately.
So this next question is sort of jumping off of a discussion Orlovsky and I had last week. We talked about the four quarterbacks, and we spent a lot of time on Winston and Mariota. And, you know, we were very mixed on both, I think, and like most people are. And I put a poll, and I said it was just Winston Mariota, or the poll, like, who gets a long-term contract? It wasn't like, you know, anything. I thought it was going to be really close, because when you talk to people, most people are, you could easily make an argument for either, I think, being the choice. It was like 72% Mariota. Now,
wow,
some of that might just be that I have a lot of followers on the West Coast from Oregon or something. Some of it might have been people choosing him for personal character reasons, valid, but I was surprised. Okay, so the question is, from I Am Kenjamin, if Tampa drafted Mariota and Tennessee took Winston, so we're at the sliding doors scenario, do you think both teams would have had more successful outcomes based on the sample size of both quarterbacks and team structure? Okay, so that's a really difficult question, because you're thinking about the teams. I'm going to kind of rejigger it, which is, do you think either of them would have been better off? Like, do you think...
Yeah.
You know, both, I think both had teams that had advantages and disadvantages. I don't think either was in a markedly better situation, if I'm being honest. But what if you played a, you know, did a parent swap?
I think, I don't think either of them would have been in a better situation. Like, I think eventually water finds its level, and both of these, they're so different, which explains the gap in that. Like, Marcus is the markedly less volatile stock. He's always, even when statistically through their earlier couple of seasons, statistically they were very similar as far as production. It was just how they got there. Jameis's was boom or bust, and Marcus's was more of an even line through the page.
When he's healthy.
Which is the other portion of this, right. But I think we would have known a lot more about Marcus, because the one thing I said in the last couple of years is, based on the weapons that they had in Tampa Bay after a while, and between 250 plus catch tight ends and the threats at receivers they had between D-Jack and why am I forgetting the tall wide receiver's name? Mike Evans down there. You had a litmus test down there to show us what you had. You would have known more about Marcus than we do now.
O.J. Howard, I mean, it's ridiculous. I would say, to Winston's credit, or in defense, bad run game.
Yes.
Bad defense, right? And obviously, when you're playing quarterback, all these things do matter. I'll say the other advantage, though, that Jameis has is better coordinators. You know, Marcus has cycled through five. I think this is either his fifth or sixth. I believe fifth. Winston, you had Cutter, and then 3 years of Todd Monken, who I think is very good.
I was going to say, I know this is a very pro-Monken podcast.
And now he gets BA. So I am inclined to think Mariota would probably play better. I agree with you. But yeah, it's a hypothetical. It'd be so useful as a hypothetical, by the way, to make them switch for a few games. It would help both teams a lot.
It would help both teams a lot. I feel like when we look back on this, considering the player that we knew he was and the way he was used early on, Marcus Mariota is going to be one of the more sadder stories of mismanaged resources that the NFL's seen. That guy at Oregon, I mean, he is the reason the Oregon program, when we look back on it, is viewed the way it was. The more I look back, it really is. Yeah, Chip Kelly and that system were great, but Marcus Mariota took that program to a place that it would not have been otherwise.
Electric. This is a question that I am hearing a lot, and I have my take on it, but I'm curious. Here's Jay Axel 2222 asks, what are the odds that the Steelers shedding their baggage, a.k.a. Mellon Brown, makes them better? I would say pretty good, considering that now Connor and Juju don't have to worry about those knuckleheads anymore. Okay, so right now, I'll just come out and say I generally think losing a generational wide receiver does not help your offense. The depth chart is at the wide receiver pass catch. Actually, I have no idea who's tight end in Pittsburgh because Jesse James walked.
Yeah, listen, your guess is as good as mine.
Did they draft someone?
Is Vance McDonald's not?
Oh, he might still be in the mix.
There.
Yeah. So the wide receiver Juju is number one, which just letting you know, Juju, it's going to be a different experience with Antonio Brown on the field. And then James Washington, we saw he was second. He's now going to his second season.
Yep.
They like the Toledo kid a lot. I've heard a lot of good things about him. Deontay Johnson. Didn't watch a lot of Toledo football.
I'm right there with you. But Pittsburgh's history of drafting wideouts.
That's what I was going to say. That's the only reason I'm like, you know, they're so good at it. I'm actually a little bit more worried about Pittsburgh's defense. I don't think they got markedly better. I know everyone loves the Bush pick, and I love it too, but that secondary still has a lot of holes.
That secondary does have a lot of holes, but we remember how different that defense looked when you had a healthy, and why am I'm really been bad with names today, but the Ohio State linebacker who was unfortunately paralyzed.
Oh, Shazier, yeah.
Shazier.
Yeah.
Remember how different that defense looked when you had a linebacker roaming the middle of the field with that level of athleticism.
And that's why there's a hope that Devin Bush, even as a rookie.
Yeah.
Could be a game changer, but it's not easy to come in as a rookie and do that. You know, even Shazier, by the way, it took him a little bit of time, I think. So we'll see. I actually wouldn't be surprised if the Steelers are pretty similar. So, like, you know, I don't think it's that losing Brandon Bell, who they haven't played with for a minute, is going to help that much. But I think they added just enough pieces to probably, as long as you, because the offensive line is the same, the defensive line is largely the same.
And the coaching staff and everyone
coaching
else,
staff.
And like the quarter, like, I'd say Munch being gone is going to be very interesting. Like you said, thankfully of the same parts. The rest of that division, haven't we kind of like hit the point now where we're a little more realistic about what it means? You've turned over quarterback in Baltimore. You've turned over quarterback and now a new head coach in Cleveland. And in Cincinnati, you've got a new head coach. There's been so much upheaval that it'll probably allow the Steelers a little wiggle room while everyone else adjusts.
At Reinforce, who is our friend Johnny, has a question specifically for you.
Oh, God.
So I need to know what shoes are on Mike Golick Jr.'s 2019 summer collection.
I'm actually, at the time of the recording of this podcast, I am wearing a brand new pair of Air Tech 2s that I got, the Hot Lava edition that I just got off the sneakers app. Pretty bullish on the Air Max 2s that I bought a while back. Trying to think of what else. It's been a big summer for the Fear of God collaboration with Nike, the streetwear brand collaboration.
You know,
they had
I don't
there.
Understand. I mean,
a couple of wild colors. No, go ahead.
Deeply interested in this, but I don't understand like why guys who are on TV care about shoes. No one's going to see your shoes most. I guess if you were like a standing situation, but
yeah.
Most of our shows, you're not standing. You're behind a desk.
Forget TV. I'm like on radio. Like I'm sitting at a desk the entire time. The question is, Mina.
Oh my God! You have your phone open to list of shoes.
These are just
is this the
ones.
Prep you did.
These are just the ones I've bought. Like this is my list of shoes. Mina, the question is, I'm 29, single, and have very few other things to spend money on, and so it has to go somewhere. And I have picked up this vice. You know what? I was talking to this Allison Turner from the Levitard Show today.
Okay.
Her and I were kicking around something, and I said part of my inspiration for being into sneakers was when we used to have Bomani Jones on when it was Mike and Mike on the morning show. He would do hits from his camera at home on Skype and he would be in his shoe closet. And so I'd just be looking back there like in awe of what was going on there and got a lot of ideas and then started to get the money to spend on it.
See, I used to look at that and be like, huh, okay. At Boat Drinks Go Aura asks, which team went the most backwards or at best neutral? Ooh.
The most backwards.
Yeah, I don't. Right. Well, I guess like there's obviously New York having lost Odell and done what they did. I'm gonna go with the team that I'm a little bit concerned about. This isn't necessarily the worst or whatever, but it's just a team I've been thinking about. Doing some prep for a separate thing, and that's Houston. I'm a little worried about Houston. I thought they would do more for the offensive line.
Yeah.
They signed Khalil. We know that they got jumped by the Eagles in the draft. Rondre Dillard ended up walking away with Sharping and Titus Howard. It's still very concerning. And then I also think that the secondary, Jadavian's still there for now, but they lost Matthew and Kareem Jackson. They did sign Sean Gibson and Bradley Roby, but I think that's a downgrade. So I'm a little bit worried about that team. They do get... Will Fuller will come back.
Yes,
much needed.
Huge for that.
Yeah, and because they didn't really do much there either in terms of adding. I thought they might go after a wide receivers. That would be my pick.
Yeah, I'd say that'd be up there. I'd say another one that's concerning, like maybe most the same. Now, we mentioned the one name that would give me pause in signing on this too much because I think it'll help a lot, but the Denver Broncos, like adding Joe Flacco as the quarterback, obviously, then you're putting Drew Lock in the position where we think he's going to start at some point this year, but he's still going to be a rookie. I think there's a lot of question marks. You've turned over some of the wide receiver talent there finally in favor of a young guy like Cortland Sutton in that offense. So I just think there's a lot of change. And when the best thing I can say is, well, you picked up my favorite offensive line coach, that's not the most glowing review of all time for the overall health of your team.
True.
It helps a lot, but.
Yeah. Mike Kirby asks, I've got this one a lot. How do you think Daryl Bevel, will impact the Lions offense, both running and passing this season? / does Stafford's chug response video to Rodgers propel the Lions to the preseason NFC North favorite? Love that two-parter. Mike Kirby, I'll address the Bevel thing because I've lived with Daryl Bevel for a long time in my life.
Familiar for you.
So I am higher on him than a lot of people. When you look back at some of those Seattle offenses, they, first of all, were ranked very high in efficiency. I think they finished first in DVOA in 2015, but most seasons they were top 10. Now obviously they had Russell Wilson, but he had to work with Tom Cable's offensive line, which basically cuts your playbook in half. So they were, I would say at times better weapons than others, but he never had like an Odell Beckham Jr. or whatever. So he had some challenges there, and I think he did a pretty dang good job. People point to what he did there, and I think they'll say, well, he's obviously going to have a run first offense because throughout that period, Seahawks were always ranked near the top of the league, and to kind of go back to our earlier discussion and running the football. But I think since Daryl left, clearly that's coming from Pete Carroll. That's a bit of a mandate from the top, so I don't know how much I would put that on Bevel. I did actually grab so before he was the offensive coordinator for the Vikings, right?
Yes.
During those last five years, and I pulled up the run pass numbers, and they did run a lot then. They also had peak Adrian Peterson. So again, it's kind of.
That'll change some things.
Yeah, that'll change some things, in 08, 09 and stuff. So Bevel, it's funny because I think he came out he was under Brad Childress. He was a West Coast guy. But I don't think you can really look at those years, and obviously he's been out for a while, and think, yep, he's absolutely, it's run, 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 run. Now I know that's what Matt Patricia wants to do. But it seems to me, looking at what he did in Seattle and what he did in Minnesota, he is a guy who tailors the offense to the skills of the players and perhaps the demands of the head coach. So given both those things, I wouldn't be surprised if it's definitely more balanced, because obviously that's what they want. But I think he has more creativity than perhaps some people give him credit for.
Yeah, and I think, like we talked about before, personnel is going to dictate a lot of that. You look where they've invested in recent years. There's a fair amount of draft picks up front for them that they've put in there. Most recently, Frank Ragnow was one of their high picks. And then, quite honestly, I think it's going to be a big year and a really interesting year to watch what goes on with Kerryon Johnson. I thought he at times flashed really well for them last year. We know they'd been dreadful in the run game for a while, that weirdly long stretch without a 100-yard rusher in a game, which, again, not that those markers are always indicative, but that's such a statistical anomaly in a league where even with rushing being down, you're still bound to have that at some point in between the stretches that they had. So I think you've just got better personnel there now.
Quick break before we get to the last few questions to tell you about Tissot, the official watch of the NBA. Each one of Tissot's timepieces delivers quality performance in traditional luxury. This graduation season, get the NBA fan in your life at Tissot Watch. The Tissot Chrono XL is a great watch for those looking for a sporty chronograph with Swiss technology at an unbeatable price. Shop now at us.tissotshop.com. So speaking of time, this next question is about a quarterback who seems to have conquered it. Yes, folks, I'm talking about Eli Manning. No, just kidding. It's about Brady. it's about the Patriots. It's from Megan Maria. And I think this is an interesting one. She asks, will the bunch of no-name offensive players and draft picks help bring the Patriots to another Super Bowl? So probably is the correct answer, yeah. TLDR. But I want to talk about the weapons just briefly, because I think that's interesting, right? I think there was some whispers this week about a Rob. He's probably going to return, right, down the road. It's going to be really annoying, like in the post, like
100%.
11 or some crap, but whatever. Until he does.
we'll assume a world where we don't have to deal with, again, the embarrassment of riches and good fortune for the Patriots, yes.
Here's a depth chart. Actually, don't know. Oh, it's Austin Seferi-Jenkins. Interesting. Not an uninteresting tight end. You know, Ben Watson got suspended.
Yep.
Receivers are Edelman, N'Keal Harry, Philip Dorsett, Dontrell Inman. Sneaky good pick. Thought the Colts would try to hang on to him. And then Demaryius Contess, who was in an accident, maybe won't make the team.
Yeah.
So anyways, I look at that. They don't look worse than last year. I mean, I guess that, you know what, that's not. Josh Gordon did give them a lot of production.
Yes. I could say before he ended up leaving the team, he was their leading receiver at that time.
So yeah. So that's, you need N'Keal Harry to step up there, and who knows? I liked him as a prospect, obviously.
And we know the Patriots will ask him only to do the things early on that he's capable of. Like, they'll put him in the best position, which is,
totally,
again, a Patriot.
I will say I think the loss of Gronkowski is going to be a little bit more difficult than perhaps some people think, just because of his contributions, you know, all the things he does.
Yeah, well, especially the run game. We talked about the Patriots' ability to flex and do so many different things is unique to them, too. We talked about all the areas these teams struggle. Like, the Patriots could do everything, and especially personnel-wise, when you don't have that, it limits your ability to go 12 as much as they wanted to last year when you don't have the ability to then flex that out and, you know, have that personnel but spread it out and do the things they could do with Gronk.
I think it's just going to largely be contingent on Brady. Is he going to be the Brady from the regular season last year who was probably above average, you know, most of the season? Are we going to see postseason? Well, he wasn't even that great in the Super Bowl until the end, but I don't know.
It's super interesting to me. Like, we always try to predict the Brady decline. What's it actually going to look like when it happens? Like, when we look back retroactively, what's the moment we're really going to be able to say, yeah, this is where we clearly knew he had fallen off? Because each time it's felt like a misnomer so far.
Okay, I'm going to do three more questions. Well, I should. We did have one from Jason Fitz.
Of course.
Question number one. When are you going to get hooked on Below Deck so we can have a group text thread about my favorite reality show?
So this came from his jealousy. You had Dan Orlovsky on last week who mentioned the group chat for the fence jump fans for the Bachelor and Bachelorette franchises. Fitz is now jealous and trying to sell us on a reality show that, quite frankly, I've never heard of.
Why can't he just watch The Bachelor?
It seems like
he
an easy
just try
fix
to get into our chat instead of trying to get us to start a whole new chat. And
yeah, that's just bad strategy on his part.
Maya Woods asks, do you think the Panthers have the defensive personnel to mix in 3-4 packages successfully? So I was surprised when I read this because under Ron Rivera, as much as I recall, the Panthers have always run 4-3.
Yep.
They did take Brian Burns with the 16th pick, the edge rusher out of Florida State, who is a speedster. a probably better suited to play 3-4 outside linebacker. So that was where my head went when I first read this. Like, oh, maybe Maez thinks that with Burns. But then I did a little bit of Googling and I saw that actually there's been the Joe Person wrote a piece in The Athletic about how they're thinking about shifting schemes. Now, that said, it's 2019. You're barely playing base anyways,
yeah.
So it doesn't really matter. But I do think, given the personnel, to go back to the question, Brian Burns as a 3-4 outside linebacker, you know, and frankly, Shaq Thompson, Washington zone, would probably be better in the 3-4 as well. So,
yeah,
you know, and you
John,
can... And,
Don Terry Poe's a guy who's played the 3-4 in his time in Kansas City who helps that. Kawan Short's kind of the interesting one in there, a guy who's been largely a 3-tech in his entire career. Can he give you some...
That would be my concern.
But to your point, though, you're never in base. So you're talking about a guy who's maybe lining up in a shaded nose. It ends up looking the same. It's just you've got basically one guy stood up and a little bit of different terminology. It's
Yeah. I mean, so I guess I should have... For those who don't know, a lot of it is really just about kind of the size of the players, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And in the 3-4, you can, you know, zone blitz more.
You could kind of, in theory with that, use Brian Burns and drop him off, kind of the way that we saw Josh Allen in Kentucky, the linebacker there.
Exactly. And I guess you don't want Brian Burns defending the run as little as you can.
Yeah.
So that would make sense as well if they were trying to gear towards his skill set. This is an interesting question. A lot of Titans content on this podcast. Maniatus 42 asks two questions. Do one more after this. Two more. One's a goofy one. Will the Titans finally unleash Derrick Henry full time? And the second one is, and I think this is related in his or her views, what are the most incompetent non-usages of stud running backs? / which teams will finally pull their heads out of their butts and use, paraphrasing, their most talented running backs next season? So I went back and checked the Derrick Henry usage because I was just curious.
Yeah.
I mean, that jibed with my memory, but he ranked 12th in rushing attempts last year. So it seems like a fair amount. But he was significantly more effective than Deion Lewis, who's used more in the passing game, but was used a lot. Lewis averaged 3.3 yards per attempt versus Henry's 4.9. Derrick Henry ranked, I always look, this is my favorite rushing stat, first in yards after contact per rush. First in the NFL. Lewis was 19th. And second in rushing Derrick Henry, second in rushing DVOA. Lewis, 43rd. So.
Dear God.
It stands that they should probably use him.
Probably. And like you said, in the right ways. Like, we know what Deion Lewis's role is because we saw it in New England. Like, we know where he's best suited and it's not eating up huge chunks on the ground. By the way, is there any more duh stat than yards after contact for the only running back I've ever stared eye to eye with standing up? Like, I covered the Heisman. I was interviewing him after and we were looking
at
each other and I was terrified.
He?
He's like full on 6'3".
Really?
He is terrifyingly large.
Wow. He is intimidating. He runs intimidating. I think he looks like the least pleasant to tackle in the NFL right now.
Has to be a nightmare.
Like,
has to be an absolute nightmare.
Probably some of those numbers are skewed by that one gigantic run he had, but although DVOA accounts for down a distance. So the second part of his question was who's used incompetently? I mean, the knee-jerk reaction is Aaron Jones.
I was just going to say that there seems to be only one Highlander, Aaron Jones. Man.
I went, high usage backs like Zeke averaged 20 attempts per game. Saquon was at 16, in the teens. Aaron Jones was 11 attempts per game, and he's top 10.
Do you have that list up right there?
I do not. Yeah.
Okay. My only question was going to be, and because this is the other name that was interesting based on kind of what they've emphasized and the changes they're looking to make, where Dalvin Cook is.
Oh, that would be an interesting one. Well, yeah, clearly they want to run the ball a lot.
Yeah.
The other name, by the way, that I earmarked as someone where there was a discrepancy between usage and success rate was Kerryon Johnson, who you mentioned earlier. Born to be a running back with that name. My Dear Dwarf asks, outside of Darth Amin, which ESPN coworker would you most like to see attempt America Ninja Warrior? Who would be the best?
Well, see, who would you most like to attempt and who would be the best? Two largely different questions.
Right. Fitz would be funny.
Having
seen him run.
Oh, well, you know who I want to see more as like a study? Because I've heard he's actually a decent hoops player, and so I would like to see Tim Kirkjian.
Ooh!
I would love to see Timmy get out there, because I feel like he might surprise, and nothing would bring me greater joy.
Who would do the best? We have so many athletes here. Non-professional athlete division, Diana Rossini is terrifying. and athletic. She played college soccer, though. So.
That is, I would say she is an athlete. She has punched someone in the face on the field of athletics, too, so terrible. Fear factor.
Okay, I'm going to do two more questions.
So, non-athlete, by the way, I'd give Field Yates a decent run.
Oh, yeah.
Athletic enough for a guy that didn't play, you know, D1 sports or professional sports.
I've seen Fields shirtless Instagram pictures.
Just posted a pretty thirst-trappy one
lately.
Oh,
I saw it.
I was like, whoa, all right, my guy.
He don't care. Well, he does. I mean, he's showing us. at this random guy asks, we can get this pretty quickly because I think it's a 1-2 contest. With Gronk on, who will take the crown of best tight end in the league? So, it's either Kittle or Kelsey, right? I guess Ertz is in the mix. Am I? Is that unfair?
I think statistically Ertz is, but I feel like there's a difference like when you watch them play athletically between what Kelsey and Kittle offer you and what Ertz offers you. I don't know. To me, the other two just like eye test only. Like Kittle's the most explosive athlete of that bunch, but Kelsey matches that with production.
They're used a little bit differently.
I would go Kelsey.
So I just pulled up some of their stats. First and second in yards. First and second in defense adjusted yards above replacement. Kittle has slightly more impressive yards per catch, per reception. He gets schemed open, I think, more, and he's used a little bit less. That's Shanahan, shout out.
Also did the majority of that, though, without the quarterback
thing I was going to say. Kelsey, more touchdowns, higher catch rate. It really is pick your poison, but it seems like those. I guess O.J. Howard would be in my other top four guy.
O.J. Howard, that's an interesting one, too. Like you said, if that offense gets any traction at the quarterback spot where the play is consistent, my God.
Last question. At Robot Wrestler, do you see the Ravens offense taking a step forwards or backwards? You can also stay in the same place. With the new young talent and Lamar under center. So let's talk about that young talent. So Brown's gone. Crabtree's gone. They have Marquise Brown, Hollywood, speedster.
Hollywood.
Justice Hill, speedster, the fastest running back, Oklahoma State, right?
Yep.
Miles Boykin from your alma mater.
Freak athlete.
And they signed Mark Ingram. So, and also Trace McSorley, who were told that they might use like Taysom Hill, which I'm very excited about.
Oh, man. The Taysom Hill copycat.
I want that to be a thing. I want that to be a thing so bad. body blows. So, okay. So it's pretty obvious that what they're going for speed.
I mean, there's a little hammer in there. You throw Mark Ingram in the mix. Hayden Hurst, their tight end, reportedly gained 20 pounds of muscle this offseason, which enjoy the random test, son.
Ooh.
My God.
Jeez. I won't say it again, but you know what I'm thinking right now.
Body pose.
So look, there was a little bit of a hubbub when Lamar said something about how he was surprised. There was new offense. I think it was just kind of a weird interview quote situation, you know.
Well, remembering that offensive coordinator was on staff during the season, got named late in the season.
Yeah.
So he was around, and you would assume if it was the same person in the building, it would be the same offense. They can't kind of contact during the offseason, et cetera.
I think he was just kind of confused by it. But it's Greg Roman who, he was coaching tight ends in Baltimore for a couple of years, who we know as Colin Kaepernick's coach.
Yes.
I'm actually more interested, I'm more intrigued thinking about the year he spent coaching Tyrod Taylor in Buffalo, a very efficient offense that season, top 10 DVOA, as I recall.
Very tight end driven also with Charles Clay.
Yep, very tight end driven. Obviously a lot of quarterback had him on the run a lot, but integrated it into the passing game as well. So it'll be interesting to see. You know, they've said they want Lamar running less. I have often said on this podcast, I sometimes think the dual threat injury thing is a little bit overstated because those quarterbacks, they get hurt in the pocket more often than they're running, especially if they know how to run. But Lamar can't run as much as he did last year, not just because of the injury or the contact thing, which is real. It's not real, but I just think it's a little overstated. He can't run that much because it's not effective if they don't think he's going to pass occasionally. So you hope that, you know, play action is such, it's significantly more effective deep, right? So you hope that the addition of those speedy young guys means we're going to see, you know, play action. Lamar's very strong up the middle, struggles a little bit more with outs. I guess those are some of the things I'd like to see in the offense next year.
Yeah, and I think one of the other things that we talked about this with the Patriots is the ability to use your personnel creatively because no one's loved tight ends like the Baltimore Ravens in the draft for the last few years. You've got an abundance of chess pieces there that you can use in a variety of ways that help disguise four defenses what you're trying to do with your young quarterback in an area that's always usually pretty quarterback friendly and tight end to begin with.
And to bring it truly full circle, I realize if you say that several times, you're just building concentric circles and time gets flattened and it's like a looper situation. So I don't, who even knows where bringing it full circle means. But to go back to the rushing debate, it's okay to zig versus when everyone's zagging and throwing it more if that's the personnel you have, right? And then that's what they're good at. And you're able to, I think, use it in a non-predictable way and make the necessary adjustments. So that's it for questions. I think, though, we have time for one last segment.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Dinks and Dunks are brought to you by ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
So we thought we'd have a little fun with this one. Obviously, Mina Kimes Show listeners are pretty familiar with Mina asking four questions and one from Lenny to whoever is on the podcast. And so we thought we'd flip the script, do a little Dinks and Dunks where I ask Mina some questions on her podcast for once. Mina, are you ready?
As ready as I'll ever be.
All right. First one, easy into this one. I realized it was more questions than just me. Of all the athletes you profiled, who surprised you most when you met them?
Oh, see, the right answer is the one I just did, but I can't talk about it yet. There's an NFL player. I have a profile coming out this summer. I'll go. Darrell Revis was really quirky. Maybe that's the right one because he's so. That was my first cover story for ESPN, and I thought he was going to be really like kind of just like serious and cerebral. And he's a very smart guy, but he's just kind of weird. In a way that I really liked. Like, he just truly doesn't care what anyone thinks of him. And I know a lot of athletes say that. He is the one athlete I think I've ever profiled who I actually believe does not care what people think of him.
Yeah, actually, it's like, oh, I don't watch TV or read the media, but secretly they're all Googling their names.
He is not. I actually think he did not read the story I wrote about him.
That's impressive, and it seems like the perfect defensive back trait, so it's no surprise.
And that's right. It was like, he has to have this mentality to play the position. He, by the way, also had to have the mentality to get trashed in the New York Tabloids every day because he was holding out. He didn't care. Most guys care.
That's why he's rich.
Yeah. Shout out.
All right. Question two. We did Highly Questionable together not too long ago, and that day the video of the horse girl was taking over the internet. It was a girl who had taken to acting like a horse for her life. She was really, really good at it, and it freaked us all out. If you had to spend the rest of your life publicly imitating one animal, what animal would it be?
That video is so upsetting.
It is truly horrifying. Okay, it's like a horror movie.
When you say, like, spend the rest of my life publicly imitating one animal, you mean, like, every day I would have to do, like, something that the animal does?
Yeah, would have to spend part of your day doing what she did, jumping over tables like a horse and making sure it was documented publicly. So which animal do you think you'd be the best at? Maybe the better way to phrase that.
Yeah. I mean, I already do, like, a dog thing, but I don't think that's the right answer here. Like a baboon, like with the arms down, I could do.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to think of something that would be a good workout, too. Or like an elephant with your arm as the trunk, like kids used to do. I could do that as well.
That would be
it to grab things.
And it's very demonstrative, too. Like, you can really have a flair for the dramatic with it.
Elephants are cute.
They are. And the good memories. There's a lot of positive characteristics about elephants.
Baby elephant, maybe top 10 cute baby animal.
Oh, unbelievable.
Top five,
well. That's a story for another day. A top five for later this summer. Top five cute baby animals. So don't give away that content yet. All right. Question three. Cam Newton's in year four of a 5-year deal. Is he a Carolina lifer?
I've
been thinking about this a lot lately because he's not a quarterback and he's recovering. We know from, a shoulder surgery right now. So
he was messed up last year.
He was messed up last year, and there's been all this talk about his style of play and what they want to do with it long-term in Carolina. Like, if this year goes south, what are we doing with Cam?
I think it depends on how it goes south, not to be like, oh, it's actually a very nuanced answer to your question. Is he hurt again? Is it, like, is it the play? You know, what is it about the play? It's interesting, right? Because at this point, you think he's Cam Newton. We know who he is. We know what he's capable of. I believe he is. It's funny. I didn't get into it, but I went back and forth a little bit once with Ryan Russillo about this, where we thought we were arguing about Cam Newton, and then we went to, this is like Twitter in a nutshell.
Oh, yeah.
And then we DM'd, and it was like, oh, no, we actually have him ranked exactly the same, like, you know, as amongst quarterbacks, which is, I think he's, firmly in the 10 through 15 range of quarterbacks at this point. High, probably right below 10, maybe like 11, 12 or something.
Kind of in that, like would you say, like, is that Matthew Stafford range too? I'm always like,
I think
kind
he's better
of...
than Matthew Stafford.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Personally. But, and his highs are, his highs are very high. And I actually think at the beginning of last season, he was really, really good and also was, developing. Like, he was more accurate. The offense was different. Surprisingly, what Norv did with him. But then I think he got hurt and was kind of a different guy.
Too many body blows?
No, that's not how you say it. But, I would pay him. I would stick with him because I think it's just so hard. Especially if I think generally, if you have a top 10 guy, no matter what, you stick with him. It's tricky when you get to that 10 to 15 range. And that's where, like I've said, I've put him in. But I think because of what he showed at the beginning of last season, if he looks like that again, I think you got to stick with him.
All right. Question. This is question four. So this is our last one before we get to Lenny's question. And Lenny was pretty fired up about this one. I'm not going to lie.
No, last one.
Is kind of similar to what we did with American Ninja Warrior, but I'm interested just coming off of, obviously, our own Louis Riddicker is someone whose name comes up a lot in GM conversations. Peter Schrager was involved in all those GM rumors at the NFL net with the Jets. Of the non-football people at ESPN, who do you think would make the best NFL GM?
Like, no, people who haven't...
Who don't cover football for us.
Oh, who aren't even affiliated with football. Oh, okay. So like a Zach Lowe or something.
Yeah.
You know who I think would be great? Jeff Passan, who covers baseball for
us,
is not only like extremely analytical and smart, but also is super funny and like a good people person. So I think he'd be really good at that job.
All right. It's a good answer. Jeff is a quality answer.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry. I was kind of distracted listening to the end of that one because I'm trying to get it right here. My voice is a little raspy today.
Folks, he's stretching.
Yeah. It's a process. I want to do justice for this one because, again, everyone knows the last question comes from Lenny. This is not me. This has nothing to do with me. This is your dog. So
is it?
You have to answer to this when you go home, all right?
We'll see.
Mina! First off, I just have to get something off my chest.
Something like him.
No, this is what I sound like. I just have a bit of a cold. I just want to say that I know you post on me about social media a lot. But recently, you just posted a photo of your parents having a birthday party for their dog.
Yeah.
And they made shirts and what the actual F-bomb? Do you even love me? This is ridiculous. I don't understand how you can claim to love me when your parents are throwing a birthday party for a dog I rarely see on Instagram.
Wow.
Sorry, I just had to get that off my chest. That's not actually the question.
That was just a preamble.
That was just something I really wanted to rant about, and this is my platform as much as yours. My name's on the podcast.
Okay.
Anyway, speaking of losing your temper, is it true that you once got kicked out of the ESPN writer's room on an NFL Sunday for a loud outburst?
How would Lenny know about that?
Listen, I don't know. He's got sources, too.
The only person who was with me who would tell him is sitting across from me. Do you and Lenny have a texting relationship?
Listen, we might have a group chat that we're in, all right, with my pugs.
That I'm not in?
Listen, start watching Below Deck.
It's true. I gave that chair some body blows.